Is Emre Can our somebody to love? It's the Day Trippers. Gary Lineker mixing his metaphors like a plum told us Brendan had thrown in a white towel. What did you think? Well, tonight we're going to reflect on Liverpool's narrow defeat in Madrid and ponder Brendan's decision making. We'll also look forward to the visit of eye-gouging wind-up merchant Jose Mourinho and his pricey Chelsea crew. I'll have a few of our trippers chats, so to rant and rave and maybe have a little cry with me in the bunker tonight are Paul Brennan, Dave Thomas and Phil Casey. I'm glad we lost 1-0. Okay. That lose, yeah. As opposed to,
you're glad we lost 1-0.
As opposed to losing 3-0, you're just going to cut that out and put it at the start of the podcast, aren't you? Okay, yeah. I suppose we have to review Real Madrid 1, Liverpool 0. So, can we start? What? Can we start with the selection, Dave Thomas? It's a very controversial thing, wasn't it?
Well, it is and it isn't controversial. It depends.
Well, it was.
Well, it caused controversy in that respect, but it wasn't. I don't think it was controversial for me. I don't think it's any different to what other managers of big clubs have done. I don't think it's any different to what managers of Liverpool have done. You know, Rafa Benitez used to prioritise games, prioritise trophies. He's played weekend teams away in the Champions League for games he didn't need to win. I think if we were, and I think Rodgers has made the similar point, if we were coming off a 4 or 5 game winning streak, you know, in great form, or if this was, you know, in that run of 12 games we had at the back end of last season, then you can make an argument that we know what our strongest 11 is. But really, I think Sterling aside, maybe, you know, who didn't play last night that is a nailed on, you know, starter based on form? Maybe Henderson.
Well, Coutinho isn't, but a lot of people think he should be.
Yeah, but Coutinho can't play 2 games in a week.
I mean, Gerrard is always a nailed-on starter. So
Gerrard is a nailed-on starter.
That's 4 right away.
The point I was making is on form, you know, if you take the names out of it, if you take, and we've talked about, you know, Brendan having a little bit of favouritism or people that we think play perhaps when they don't merit play. And I think Gerrard's one of those players. Mm. You know, I think there was more good than bad last night in terms of the selection. I think dropping Gerrard for a big game is a really important psychological long-term thing.
That's a fair point. And like, Paul, would you have a similar feeling about it? Like that was possibly one of the good things that came out of it, was that we saw we could go and maybe not be awful in his absence.
Yeah, well, like I started off kind of looking around. I saw, you know, the news kind of filtered through as the afternoon came on that there was going to be a lot of changes. Mm. And at first, everybody was going mad. And they just, I kind of said, we've been crap. Like, so I've no problem with changes. I don't see what the problem is. Mm. And then the more I kind of like thought about it, I was like, I'm absolutely delighted with this. Like, that fine, because it's what we've been crying out for. That, like, we keep saying he's doing the same things every week, same people, making the same mistakes every single week. And then when he goes and changes it, everybody's in uproar saying, no, you can't change
exactly.
It. So, like, it just shows that there's no pleasing people. I was fairly delighted with it, and I thought it paid off fairly well.
Wasn't it though, Phil, the game in which he chose to do that, what Paul's talking about, that if you'd done that against Newcastle, the game that we all watched together in a very happy state, if he'd done it there, we'd have been happy, wouldn't we? You know, but it's because it was Real Madrid that a lot of people went, you know, this is what we've waited for, this is the big Champions League night, you don't start fucking about here. And that's how people saw it. They saw him as messing about.
See, again, it depends on your viewpoint on it. Like, there is a part of you that says, you know, if you go out and get thumped last night off the back of a poor result against Newcastle and you play a second string, that the amount of pressure that's on him at the weekend then is unbelievable to get. And there's a big amount of pressure on him to get a result now against Chelsea for doing what he did.
Yeah.
There's also the fact that the team hasn't performed all season with the exception of the Spurs game. So if he could make the changes in any of the games, and nobody would have really said anything. The only difference was that this was Real Madrid and the Bernabeu, and there was almost a sense that when we heard, and I suppose we've got to separate two things here. There's the actual team he chose, right? And then there was the rumours of the team that was going to start that went on for nearly 24 hours beforehand. Mm. And people had already sort of seen this as a white flag before the team was even named because we were all expecting, I wonder where I'm going with this.
We wish.
expecting Glenson at right back, and then we were also expecting to see Lambert up front, and we're expecting to see Ghosty in there as well. And you were looking at it saying, what type of team is this? Well, the team that was widely rumoured would have seen Lana, Coutinho and Markovic as a three behind Balotelli. Behind Lambert as a front man, right? And then with Lucas and Allen holding the midfield. And then a back four, which was Glenson, Skirtle, Toure and Moreno, right? And that's what led to the crescendo of noise around the idea that we'd putting up a white flag and we didn't actually give a shit if we got thumped going out to Real Madrid. When you did actually see this team selection, and we saw Manquillo start, we saw that Moreno started, who are our best fullbacks. You know, we saw Toure start, and I said 2 weeks ago, I was saying that, look, Toure, of all the defenders we have, looks the most natural leader of all the defenders. I didn't have an issue with Toure starting in that game at all. And I think he performs better in the bigger games, which he's always done since he's been at the club. And then you see the midfield, and you see Emre Can in there, and you see Allen in there, and you see Lucas. Yeah, Lucas, you raise your eyebrows and you go, not really sure. Is it that much more of an upgrade on Gerrard? I probably would have preferred to see Henderson in there and have the three with the most legs that was there. And then you're looking up top and you're seeing Barini start. He's going to run all night. If you're going to play the way we played last night, and you could see the way we were going to set up from the start of this, then it made sense to play him because he will do hustling and hurry. And we saw he was chasing down Casillas whenever he got on the ball. So... separating the actual team selection to the build-up to the team selection, that's what I think got most people's backs up, was the feeling that we were putting out a really weakened team, when in fact we didn't put out that much of a weakened team at all when it came down to it. You could say that those players were chosen because the players who had been chosen up until then, who were being rested, just hadn't performed over 2-3 games at that stage.
And there was a huge amount of... Sorry, Paul, yeah, go ahead.
That's what pleased me, that Rodgers did come out and say he didn't kind of skirt around and say, oh yeah, I'm kind of trying to rest some people for it. He said, no, that wasn't good enough against Newcastle. And he made the point of saying, look at our recent form. Like, you try and pick a best 11 out of that. And it's like, there's been a lot of stuff written about how he kind of threw the game. But like our form was just ridiculous. So to think that that team wasn't going to get whipped if he just put out the same team again. I thought they would have lost very heavily if he put out the kind of listless, rudderless team that he's put out the past few weeks.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the fact that Real Madrid, and we're going to talk about it, it's one half of a doubleheader. He's got to go now and reward the players who played well on Wednesday night by being in the team on Chelsea. If he's lying about some of this is about dropping players who haven't performed, then you've got to say that there are at least probably two or three players who played last night who played their way into the team. Mm-hmm. So that's the first bit, it's the first part of a doubleheader. This will only look good if we beat Chelsea.
Yeah.
If we beat Chelsea, I think we have to beat them, right? Mm. If he loses against Chelsea, it's three defeats in a week, and it doesn't matter how you dress it up. Mm. The selection thing goes out the window. The other thing I'll say about the Real Madrid game is this. You know, one of the criticisms being made of Rodgers is that he's treating it almost like a friendly, like a testimonial. But I actually think playing players out of form or playing the wrong team simply because it's a marquee game, that's a testimonial. Playing Gerrard last night because it's in the Bernabeu and he's Steven Gerrard, that's what you do in a testimonial. What he did last night was not treated like a testimonial. He treated it like a game out of six that he has to play in the Champions League, and he figures, I can afford to lose this. I can't afford to lose the next two, but I can afford to lose this. So, you know what? In the grander scheme of things, he made a big call.
There were a lot of his buys in the team. A lot of guys that he'd sorted out and he'd picked out as Liverpool footballers.
Well, he said it before the game, which I thought was quite interesting, that by the end of this run of games, so I assume he means by the time we go into the international break, I think a lot of these new players for him would have had enough of an opportunity to say whether they have a long-term future, but he's going to learn a lot about them. And I think that last night was a big kind of call to some of these players to say, okay, show me what you've got. Some of them did well last night, some of them didn't do well last night, and there's some that you have worries about. I think the fact that Lovren didn't make the squad and Lambert didn't make the squad, I think both of those are messages to both of those players that they haven't done well enough.
Well, let's look at the players that did play then, and we'll start with the defence, I guess. We might as well start with the very first or last line of that defence, which is Mignolet and Phil. We've discussed Mignolet's drop-off in form, but you would have to say that he was quite impressive last night, would you not?
I'm probably in a small percentage that thought that he had a good game and not a great game.
Mm-hmm.
I think he made some great saves in the first half, particularly the one that's after about 2 or 3 minutes. That was a great save. Some of the later saves where he's punching the ball, the free kick that comes over the wall, there wasn't much bend on it, and he almost got himself ahead of the actual ball, expecting a swerve that wasn't there.
He did punch well very aerially, didn't he? Yeah, very, very high ones.
And what I will say about him, the things that you would expect him and want him to do, he did,
yeah.
Which is a step on from what he has been doing in previous weeks. He was quick off his line. There was a couple of times where the ball broke, and he was like a lightning off the line and was able to get down. And he looked a bit more confident in himself with the ball at his feet, especially with the worst take on ever of Ronaldo at one stage towards the end of the game. I was like, pull backs, drag backs, and then I was like, then he started takes an extra touch, and it's like, going, oh, that's gotta go all over the place.
As he passes it, he does the little calm down motion. Yeah. It's always in control.
I've got this shit. I've got this. Yeah.
But he does. He came for crosses last night. He got good punches on the ball. Yeah. You know, as I said to you, it wasn't a great game, but it looks a great game in comparison to the performances that he's been putting in over the course of the season. And again, we haven't signed anyone else. He's there until January, at the least. I don't think they'll change him before the end of the season. And to be totally honest about it, I think we'll sign a backup goalkeeper in January at best. And we need him to be confident in his performances and build on that performance last night. If that should say to him, yeah, okay, I can cut it. You know, but I need to build on this, not build on what's gone on before, build on that performance and get better from that performance, as opposed to going back to the base level he'd been at before.
I think there was a couple of interesting things last night. I saw one, and this is just an aside, but I did see a stat saying that Mignolet has dribbled past more players this season than Ozil has for Arsenal, which I think is quite interesting.
He had more successful dribbles than Lallana last night.
But the other thing I think to say on Mignolet is, it's a unit, right? So if you talk about the goalkeeper having a good night, that's because he wasn't actually put in many difficult positions by his central defence.
A few pacey passbacks in his direction, but not bad.
But I think less than we usually play.
Yeah,
I think compared against Newcastle, we seem to play around Lovren, Skrtel and Mignolet for 40% of the game or something. Yeah. Like, you know, so we didn't do that last night. We cleared our lines. We weren't interested in having the ball.
Yeah, and I think a lot, and I don't know whether you want to park Mignolet at that point, but just rolling onto defence, a lot's been made of how much better we were in defence last night, but I think an awful lot of that came down to the fact that we let Skrtel defend on the 18-yard line and he didn't have to push up.
Exactly. Yes.
And we weren't exposing Toure to a ball over the top where he would have been challenged for pace, let's say. So there's a lot of it, you know, there's a bit of cause and effect here. It's not that they were exceptionally brilliant at defending the way we've been trying to defend over the last seven or eight, nine
it was
games.
The things changed a
it
bit.
Was that we defended very much like a Stoke team, sat on top of the 18 yard box, let them come onto us and look to play when we could on the counter attack as quickly as we
could. Many last ditch foot ins were there last night? It was remarkable, and they were effective.
But
let's be honest.
Listen to me, it's rare that we've gone up against sides over the last year, 18 months, where we have been quite clearly the underdog, and we were prepared to be pragmatic and sit on the defence and look to counter. We did it a bit when we'd get 2 or 3 goal leads up last season, and we knew we had a cushion there, and then we let teams come on to us
because
they had
the
and then break really quickly.
Yeah.
But I just think, you know, going back to the centre defence, I actually thought Skrtel didn't have that particularly good of a game in an all round defensive sense. I thought he was very good early in terms of dealing with crosses and set pieces in, which he hadn't been up until lately.
He was actually fantastic. Yeah.
And I think it's interesting that on the set pieces they freed him from marking. He's not marking a player anymore. He's been told to just go and attack the ball. And I think they've actually decided the fella can't mark in the box. He's hopeless at it, right? But what he can do is he's decent at heading the ball clear. So we leave him free, get other people to pick up players. And I think having the likes of Jan in the team and Manquillo in the team, who again are good defensive header of the balls, allows you to free up Skrtel to just go and attack a ball. But listen,
is it cruel to highlight his hard crossways moments that he gave us?
No, it's not. And this is what takes me back, because we're talking about Lovren being very poor over the 8 or 9 games. Skrtel has been in that defence for nearly all of them. And you know, there wasn't just that instance. The one where Toure ends up saving Ronaldo's shot with his arse, right? Skrtel goes walkabouts there. Toure goes to close down Benzema. Skrtel, for whatever reason, comes over towards Toure and leaves Ronaldo. He's actually tracked Ronaldo back into the box and then just leaves Ronaldo completely free in the box. And you're there going, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Because if the ball breaks, it's hilarious. He falls on the ground and Toure then has to cover the distance from where he'd been marking Benzema.
Waddle.
Waddle effectively.
And a very fast crab waddle to get across and get his arse out to actually get the ball. But like, you know, that just shows you the level of performance that Kolo Toure put in last night, because every time you looked, he was the one that was marshalling and taking up the sensible defensive position that goes on. There was moments of madness from Kolo, but you're always going to get that. But of all of them, he looked like the old head that was out there, and he knew how to keep that defence pulled in and tight.
Well, it's fair to say, isn't it, that there's only Kolo, Lucas and Skrtel that had Champions League experience of any note in that team. Am I right in saying that? Probably. That's probably right, isn't it?
Yeah, because
Moreno, maybe?
No.
Jan played against United as well.
Jan played,
But considerable Champions League experience. You're talking about those guys, like, so, to be fair.
Yeah, but I mean, Skrtel's missed the prime of it. Skrtel's missed 5 years or 4 years of Champions League football, really. Yeah. I mean, it's been a long time since he was in there. I thought that, I think on the set pieces bit, and I know when we, I'm sure everyone's listened to our wonderful live show on Saturday, but we talked about the fact that we've changed the zonal marking at set pieces. So your point about Skrtel, basically what they've done is they put four players essentially on the 6 yard line.
Right.
And then three players block in any runners, and Skrtel just goes and heads everything.
Yeah.
You know, basically, which is exactly. So, what I would say is people are crying out for Rodgers to do something about the defence. This is a really visible thing that he's
done.
You
can see.
We haven't conceded a set piece score in four games, and that's nothing to, you know,
as we go
about
to play Chelsea.
Right. So it's a test for us, but the reality is we were conceding a set piece goal a game before that, you know. So it's four games now, and we haven't really had a scare from a set piece either. You know, we've had scares by, you know, losing runners, but we haven't had a set piece scare. So I think that, to be fair, the defensive side, particularly on set pieces, has really improved. But Kolo made a big difference last night.
Well, let's finish out with the centre of defence with Kolo, Paul, and talk about... I was listening to some show on the way home from work yesterday evening on the radio, and they were just basically laughing at the idea.
Was it?
Yeah, it was Uncle Joe was talking to me. And they were basically just... Sure. they were just basically talking about Kolo Toure, and they were making a complete laugh of him. The concept of Kolo Toure playing for Liverpool... what is going on there in Champions League against Real Madrid. But like, it was beautiful to watch him kind of vindicate his presence, wasn't it?
Yeah, because like a lot of that is kind of unfair on him, I think. You know, the kind of joke, because he made a couple of mistakes last year that were really high profile.
Yeah.
But I don't think over the course of the season he made as many mistakes as someone like Skrtel did.
No.
So the kind of the faces that he makes when he, you know, kind of like, oh no, I've just kicked into my own there. Oh no, I've kicked into Nietzsche. It kind of adds the comedic effect of it. But I don't think he's as hugely error prone as he's made out to be, and he's not a comedy figure at all. And he was well worth this shot yesterday, because as we said, the defence has been awful.
You watch him strolling, well, not quite strolling, whatever he was doing with his big arse out of defence, Baresi style. It was quite
he was dancing by players.
He was
dancing. I saw three pullbacks, a step over and a twist inside, and I was there going,
because you know what Kolo doesn't suffer for, right, which every other central defender we have suffers from? He doesn't get a rush of blood to the head. He gets the complete opposite of that, right? Which is, he has no blood going to his head. But he doesn't do what Skrtel and Lovren do, which is the adrenaline gets going and they go and try and win everything. Kolo doesn't, he's not interested in winning everything. The ball will come to me, man, relax, you know? I'll take care of it from there. So what I thought he was brilliant at last night was, and bearing in mind, we played with two 20-year-old fullbacks last night, and he talked both of them through that game. Mankiw less, but definitely Moreno, who had a really strong game. It was noticeable how many times Kolo Toure said to him, pull in, push out, you got him, you go there, you pull in. He was screaming at Lallana most of the game to track the runner. And if you notice, and we'll get on to talk about this, that didn't happen on the right side of the pitch. We didn't get people tracking the runners on the right side of the pitch.
Yeah.
So Kolo Toure has to start on Saturday.
And it was just good to see someone take a lot of responsibility in defence. He wasn't freezing on, oh bollocks, the ball's coming out. He won it. He tracked runners. I just thought he was brilliant. There was everything that we were crying out for. Obviously, it was a different kind of style of defending than we will use most of the season, but you can't really argue with.
But when you combine it with Skrtel at the best of giving us the best of what he gives us, which is aerial strength and a bit of solidity and a block tackle and that kind of thing, it wasn't a bad little mixture.
Yeah, but listen, Kolo Toure has played 300 Premier League games. He's won two league titles. You know, he's played for his national team for 14 years in the African
40
Cup of
years.
Nations.
He's played
in World Cups. You know, he is not a bad footballer. He is physically regressed, but he is a very, very good central defender. And if we had him 10 years ago, if Kolo Toure was 10 years younger, he'd be the best central defender in the league, because he was when he played for Arsenal 10 years ago.
He's
That's
right
how good
though.
A player he is.
He was a right back then.
10 years ago.
Yeah. No, he was a left winger, wasn't he? That's where I first saw him flying past me.
No, he was just there.
Dave introduced the idea to fullbacks and Colo talking to Moreno through it. Those two
fullbacks.
Guys. Yes.
It's an idea.
The idea of fullbacks.
those two guys put in performances
yeah,
that were.
And look, Dave called it out. Moreno is what I remembered Alan was when he's the master of the nick ball. Mm. Like, you know, it's not so much, it's not a crunch and tackle. He just knows when to nick in. And then now he does like a dodgy tackle on the edge.
He times it right.
What's he doing with Gareth Bale there? That is ridiculous.
He's timed it perfectly.
Well, first of all, Bale has no right foot, so he should have just let him go.
I don't care. He was there in the same half of the pitch as Bale.
I think he had to do it.
He's two inches away.
If there's a chance of kicking Gareth Bale up in the air outside the box, I'm kicking Gareth Bale up in the air.
I'm just amazed.
And you can nearly see the moment Moreno said, "Oh fuck, I'd better take him down now." The box is coming in very quickly. He took him out. The right thing.
You know what he did well? He made sure that he made a mark in the grass. Yeah. it's like, get my studs in there.
There we go. But no, and you know, Manquillo has been sort of, people have said, oh, he didn't have that great a game or whatever. But it's a valid point, Dave said. Moreno had a lot more cover from Lallana than Manquillo did on his side. And if you look at the goal that they scored, the winning goal they scored, Isco and Marcelo got doubled up on Manquillo so much during the game. One went on the inside and one went on the outside. Yeah. And because there was nobody covering, and given that we were playing with a deep line defence and we were playing with a deep line block in midfield as well, the fact that Manquillo wasn't getting cover down that side really causes the problem.
It was very irritating as well, because that kid was good. Like, he put in a good shift. Yeah. It's just he was exposed. It wasn't he was doubled up on.
Yeah.
There's a bit of that. You don't agree? I thought positionally he was a little suspect as well, Manquillo. He does like to go walkabout and he does leave gaping holes in behind him. I think he should have been covered better from both Markovic and Lucas. When Isco cuts inside,
what happens is that neither Lucas takes the responsibility to go and say, you know, let him know he has Isco.
Yeah.
And then Markovic, like, is with Marcelo. He's tracking him, and then just stops. Yeah. And lets Marcelo come on. Now, if he goes with Marcelo, Marcelo is under pressure, then he doesn't get the chance to take a touch, look up, and put that ball in. Yeah. So what happened there is that Manquillo has come in, because Lucas hasn't gone with Isco. He's gone to the threat, which is on the edge of the 18-yard box. Skirtle is occupied with a man, and he's done what any fullback you'd want in that position to do, go to where the threat is that's coming down the fullback channel. The problem is now he's exposed, because as he goes there, the runner that's coming from with the fullback stops running. And as soon as the ball is played back to Marcelo, he then has to try cover the ground, and he's never going to cover that ground.
I mean, Markovic does the Glenn Johnson move, which is you see a man run past you and you stop for some reason, and you just look at the rest of your defence and go take him on. I still think, and you know, it's fine margins, I still think Manquillo's wrong. I think that's Manquillo's mistake first, to come out as far as he's come to try and win a ball. It's never his to win. But again, you know, you've got two 20-year-olds and a 29-year-old.
Yep.
The 29-year-old central midfielder has to spot that. Lucas doesn't run, doesn't move, doesn't track the runner. And that is why, if you're playing two defensive midfielders, I'm sorry, that is the move that you have a defensive midfielder for, is to cover that run, to get closer, to either block off the runner or to track Marcelo so that he can't get the cross in. Once the cross comes in, I mean,
well, let's talk about Lucas and Jan then. Start off with Lucas. An awful lot of people, as you said, Phil, early on, were kind of wincing a little bit when they saw him coming in, because for some reason, like, mainly through his own form, he's really out of favour with fans.
I thought he had a reasonably good game,
but he was okay, wasn't he?
Yeah, I thought, like, he had a reasonably good game. Look, in fact, if we're measuring up against how we've played in that position all season, he's put in one of the better performances
for sure.
Look, and that's straight up. And we didn't think we were playing with two defenders. I thought we were playing a sort of a 4-1-4-1 formation in reality, right?
Yeah.
Because I thought Alan and Jan were just slightly ahead of Lucas, and Lucas was expected to fill in the gaps just behind them. So if they went to go into, say, Isco and James, who was in that space, Lucas was being tasked to go to the one where the ball was, and then either Alan or Jan, whichever side it was, would drop off and try cover the
which
other
is a big ball. Ask on him, and you know, fitness wise and all the rest of his mobility wise, he was solid enough. Yep. You know,
For him to come into that game as well,
exactly,
without playing much, I think he got caught. He got exposed a few times with his mobility, which is going to happen with Lucas. But I thought, defensively, he picked up quite a lot of second balls, put in a good few tackles, and I thought his passing was really good.
And he didn't do his magical scary area tackle.
No.
Well, at least
he did have one.
He did have one, but like, he usually does about 4 or 5 of those in the match.
Yeah, I thought he was very composed. That's what it was. It was composed again. But I think a lot comes comes back again to defend deep. He doesn't have massive distances to cover, and he wasn't getting overly exposed in terms of what was going on. Because
you see, you don't get to see that moment where he's jogging back about half a mile before. Yeah,
there'll be a clamour, and it's an understandable clamour to say that he should start against Chelsea ahead of Gerrard. So let me offer a slightly different view. I think that if we're going to play Chelsea to draw 0-0, you play Lucas. But if you're going with any hope to win any game, I think you saw last night the limitations in Lucas's game. For him to look good, he literally has to be between the 18-yard line and the halfway line. Like, I don't think he ever broke into the opponent's half. And he also had two players around him and four defenders.
Was there not a fair chance we might be set up exactly the same against Chelsea?
So let's say for Chelsea, you might say, let's win, let's go and do it. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't do it. Gerrard at least gives you something in the other direction. I don't think Lucas gives you that. So as well as he played last night, that was a system designed to not concede goals. Mm. And Lucas works in that system. But we didn't have a shot on target till 56 minutes.
Yeah.
And that's where you miss the attacking players. And I thought the whole attacking end of the team was poor. But segue and then in Demiré Jean, which was the other player in midfield, I mean, that is the best central midfield performance we've seen from a Liverpool player all season.
That's a big show.
Better than Henderson against West Brom, better than Gerrard against Everton. That was the best
central midfield. Tell me what was good about it specifically.
He was phenomenal. He carried the ball great. He was end-to-end. Like, we haven't seen a player be end-to-end since maybe Mascherano, and he's better on the ball than Mascherano. He wanted the ball all of the time. I think his passing completion was phenomenal. Dropped off a little bit in the second half when he came under a bit of pressure because Madrid recognised that he was a strong player. And he was our outlet. He was quicker than Markovic, who's meant to be a speedball. And Emre Can doesn't look quick, but when he gets the ball, he holds off players and he drives us forward. I thought he was phenomenal.
I have to say, looking at it, and I keep looking at them, week in, week out, and when I see him play, like, I was so disappointed he didn't play against Newcastle. Yeah. And I sort of accepted it that he'd be starting against Real Madrid. And that was as I said to you earlier on in the selection, the idea that he wasn't starting against Real Madrid was doing my head in, because he'd played so well against Hull to not then play, say, in the League Cup game and not play any role again in Newcastle when we were crying out for physicality in the midfield. Yeah. It was great to see him on the pitch, and it shows you what he brings. And I'm just dying to see a midfield that has Jan on one side and Henderson full flow on the other side of that midfield, because the pace and the power that the two of them bring. But I think Jan is better on the ball than Henderson is at the moment. I think Henderson probably spots better passes.
He's quicker too.
I think Jan, he's just so good and so composed and always seems to know. Reminds me so much. It does remind me so much in terms of in possession of what Alonso was like, in terms of he always seems to be aware of the players and the space that's around him. And if he's not just going to play a forward for the sake of playing a forward, he's happy to go and then get into space. The great thing about him is he always gets into a space and is looking for the ball back. And so many times last night he moved into a little pocket of space and is screaming for the return ball because he knows he can then bring it forward.
I don't want to build him up too much, but he actually reminded me of someone like either Vidal or Schweinsteiger. You know, a player that you could literally put in any one of the three midfield positions and he can do it all. Physical, wants the ball all the time, two great feet. That's what Henderson doesn't have. Isn't a great with his left foot. Jan is. Just an all-round midfield player.
To cover that amount of ground in that game and not get caught out of position on the counter-attack.
Yeah.
Like he seems to have a knack of going just far enough that he knows, like, if we lose the ball here, I can get back. Yeah. And he has the legs to get back. We've seen that.
Yeah. Do you know, an awful lot of people, some people who are paid to commentate and pass analysis on the game.
Stephen Nicol.
You know, just don't understand his
running
style.
What kind of a shout was that? What kind of a shout was that? He said he was wasteful in possession.
And he was trotting around the pitch.
Trotting.
His running style is one that he does, like a Mascherano. Every time Mascherano jogged, he looked like he was in a full-pace sprint. You know what I mean? That type of, because he's got shorter legs and the whole lot. Chan always looks like he starts off slowly and then it's a train, basically. You know what I mean? He just starts going and going and going and going and going and going and going. Hierro, going and going and going and going and going and going and going.
To put it into context, at one point in the second half.
Didn't believe that for a second.
And in the second half, he cleared a corner or a cross from his own box and he was the one closing down
Casillas. That was the moment. That was the moment.
That's the bit where you go, fucking hell. Yeah.
Either he is trotting around the pitch and has a warm hole that he's able to run through.
Just around the 18 yards.
Oh, there's two of them.
he has a sort of arrogance as well that Henderson doesn't have. You know, like he gets the ball and his head's just up. It just looks so easy, everything that he does. Yeah. And you know, when he gets in a physical battle, it's a real kind of like Henderson is a real kind of like terrier and all. But Jan is real kind of like, I'm going to fucking burst you.
Yeah, he doesn't have the self-doubts that Henderson has. You know, if Henderson plays a bad pass, you can see him. He's killing himself afterwards. He's like, fuck's sake.
Yeah, but Dave, you and me would be confident too if we looked like Emre Can, let's be honest.
Chan is just like, Hierro.
What do you mean?
What's going on with that? I mean, you're the explorer over here.
So I think he's another one. I think Torre, Manquillo and Jan should be nailed on to start against Chelsea. But I'm not sure.
We haven't spoken about Joe Allen.
Come on, Jeff.
Let's talk about Joe Allen, Paul. He has a lot of fans here in the room, I think it's fair to say. Yeah. People want to see him. No. not his best night last night.
No, I think obviously we played a lot of squad players. And obviously some of them were limited, but I think he was one of the only performances that I thought was poor, like quite a bit below his level. Because I am a big fan of him, but it's like his passing, there was no kind of real temper, it wasn't really crisp.
Do you know what the most disappointing thing was? That he played up to all the stereotypes that people who criticise him point to.
Yeah.
Say that he's weak and he can't tackle and he gets knocked off the ball and, do you know, he doesn't... I've got the line in my hat right. But, you know, so, like, that was the most disappointing thing about
him. Yeah,
he wasn't crisp and tidy in possession, at least.
Yeah, and I think he put in a few nice kind of recovery tackles where there was someone running at the defence and he thought he was going to foul, but he did actually nick the ball quite nicely. But on the ball, I don't think he was anywhere near what he should be. And I think he wants to play deeper. He wants to play where Lucas is. That's where he wants to pass from. Yeah. I don't think he looks comfortable getting the ball as one of our most advanced midfielders.
Yeah, I think the experiment of Joe Allen as a number 10 just like has to stop. I mean, I think that, first of all, I think we're saying about probably all four of the players we're about to talk about, but yesterday wasn't a game for attackers, right? And Allen was nominally, he was an attacker. He was playing as the attacking midfielder. I don't think he's ever shown that he can play that position. I don't think in his entire career in Liverpool he's ever looked comfortable that close to goal. He's not a player that hurts teams like that. He doesn't do assists. He doesn't do goals. He doesn't do through, you know, killer passes. He's the guy you want either where. But he doesn't,
just shoot
right?
Him.
You know?
Doesn't do the team.
He doesn't, you know, he doesn't.
Not
you know,
here.
No way.
Nice.
You want him, as Paul says, you either want him where Lucas plays or you want him just ahead of where Lucas plays, knitting everything together.
And will you have him where Lucas plays on against Chelsea? I mean, that's the one.
He shouldn't start. Yeah. He needs a little rest now. I mean,
he needs a little rest.
But we've asked a lot of him. He's played three games in a week. Like he shouldn't be starting against Chelsea.
A man who is likely to be rested is your mate Markovic, Phil. Someone told me, or someone said, I think it was on Twitter, that he looks like a fantastic tennis player, which I thought was a good shout. He does look like a good tennis player, but maybe it's not the night to be, or the evening to be too harsh on him, or is it?
It's not.
He was okay last night.
Yeah.
Look, I think what I've seen of Markovic, he's a very limited player. Okay, I just don't see, and I've said it, you know, and I keep being told in his defence is, oh, we have to give him time. He's only a young player. It's going to take a while for him to develop. He's gone to a new country. It's a new league. That's the Champions League.
Yeah.
Right, he's playing for Benfica last year. They're in the Champions League, right? My issue with him is more so that he just looks like a player that's overwhelmed by the whole thing.
He does a bit, doesn't he? It was like, what was he offering there in terms of, like...
There was one time, right, we were told, going back to Dave's point, about this phenomenal speed, right? So even at, say, somebody like Gonzalez, right, even as limited as he was, he always looked really fast on the pitch when he ran. And even Downing had moments in a game where you say to yourself, not many, but like, you know, and I just don't see, there was one time he broke and not the Varane one where Varane just sort of brushed him aside and said, who are you? Like, do you know what I mean? There was another one, I think it was the second half, he broke and he'd only one player. And, you know, I wanted to see him knock the ball past, Because the billing that we got was that this fella could be as good as Ronaldo. Knock the ball past and just go on a straight,
just kill
straight
him for
foot
pace.
Race.
Just kill him for pace. Yeah.
And I don't see that next. I just haven't seen that pace. I haven't seen that gear. You know, that extra.
So in the absence of that, you look at technique. Do you see the technique?
I don't see the tricks.
Do you see the strength on the ball? See, they're the three things
you look for. That's what I'm struggling with when I see him. And, you know, I'm told, you know, he will come good and he will do this and he will do that. But there's also a part of me that says, generally, when players have come good, they've shown something in their early stages at the football club to indicate that it is. Like when people say, well, what about Henderson? I remember like the game against Bolton. I think it was the second or third game after Henderson signed. And that was a game that showed what Henderson was going to be all about for Liverpool. And he scored that day, and he was monstrous on the pitch for Liverpool that day. And his first five or six games, he was a very good footballer for Liverpool. Joe Allen, when he signed, first 10 games, we thought Joe Allen was the best midfielder we'd signed in a long, long time. You know what I mean? These type of players, and then they drop off, and then you wait, and they come back into form, and you say to yourself, oh, yeah, no, there was a drop off, and but you can always go back to
it. There's always something to see.
There's always to come back.
Yeah.
So far, I haven't seen whether it's been a Premier League side, whether it's been a pre-season friendly, mm-hmm. whether it's been a Championship side in the League Cup, and now in the Champions League, and even against the weaker sides in the Champions League, I just haven't seen where his step up in class is. And that's where I'm struggling with him as a player. And look, I don't want to damn him. I want to see him succeed. I want to see all the players succeed that we have, right? And I really do. But like, I just keep, every time I look at it, I'm saying, I'm struggling with the price tag. And people say, well, you can't just put, that's the price the club are prepared to pay. But if you're paying 20 million plus, and the same goes for Lallana for me as well, but if you're playing that, you need a player that's going to make an impact now. Mm. We can't afford to spend £20 million on players who aren't going to make an impact for 4 or 5 years.
Well, the difference is, I suppose, there that we did see a little bit of that thing that Phil was talking about, a little bit of flashes of brilliance from Lallana. Maybe not necessarily last night. He had a bit of a Joe Allen last night, didn't he?
Can I just say on Lallana, and I said it like when we were previewing the Champions League and when we were kicking off in the hall, I thought that Lallana would struggle in the Champions League because I think the teams that he's playing against, the top end teams, are used to that style of player when they're playing in European leagues week in, week out. Players who are very good carrying the ball and can run past players and are well set up to defend against that type of player. And that's where I think he's struggled in the Champions League. I think he's more capable of doing it in the Premier League. And then that poses the exact same question I said against Markovic. If you sign a player for 20 odd million that can only do it in the Premier League and can't do it in the Champions League, and it's a little bit harsh on him. But at the same time, I'm not going to be harsh on Markovic and not be harsh on Lallana on the same page.
That harshness is fair, Paul?
I think Lallana was put on the wing to do a job, though, yesterday. Like, I think if you're going to play him wide, you want him getting the ball near the box, ideally. Whereas yesterday, I think it was more about his kind of how he presses and his
diligence. He did work very hard,
defensively, which he is really good at. We saw that against Everton as well in the last few minutes when he was still chasing around. So I think he was kind of sacrificed a bit. It was a bit of a, like, take one for the team, go out there and do a job for us.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to be too harsh. The one time the ball was fed into him near the box, he got one of our only shots off, the lovely kind of turn, and he hit it straight
away
with his left.
Yeah.
Which, like, he is kind of really unpredictable that way. But yeah, I think he was kind of sacrificed a bit yesterday.
I also think that, you know, through the course of the game, we must have had, what, 5 attacks in 90 minutes? So
4 shots, I believe.
It's not a night where you're ever going to come out of it talking about how good our attack is. You know, I Sterling had 15 minutes and did nothing. You know, Coutinho had 10 minutes and did nothing. You know, so I mean, it just wasn't a night for attacking players. I see exactly what everyone's saying about Markovic. You're looking for something. I actually thought he, taken in isolation, I thought that was one of probably his best game for us. I mean, he, you know, had a couple of nice dribbles. He was involved in a couple of things. Same with Lallana, but it's difficult to make judgments on a night where you've essentially defended for 90 minutes and you know, you've relied on pockets of little bit of attacking play, you know. So
Markovic's best dribble was really where he took it from the edge of our box and went diagonally across the pitch, but it got smothered. You know, it's the end product.
It's the end product, right? He checks back too much. He passes back too much. He looks like he's a little frightened of taking that risk of as Phil says, knocking a ball past the player and seeing can you beat them and see what they did. So, see, I just don't think, and look, we've had this debate, I don't think comparing him to anyone else, you know, as like Downing or Gonzalez, the people that haven't worked out with him, but I just don't think that's helpful. I just don't think it says anything about him. He's played less than 10 games for the club. he might end up being terrible. He might end up. And what he's shown us so far hasn't been good.
I don't think I'm saying he's terrible. I just
think that Phil's saying he's terrible. So, like, but
I think it's, and look, I'll stand over.
But that's okay.
I'll say it out loud. That's my opinion. It's not that I want him to be terrible. I just think he is.
Right. So whereas I think there is an argument to say he's being poor, he's being terrible, whereas I don't think he will be terrible. But I just don't think there's any point right now in... I don't think there's going to be any point for a while in saying he's this or he's that.
We've just talked there about Alan, about Markovic, about Lallana, and none of them were exactly wonderful. They were foraging away behind our front man.
Barini.
And what did you make of
Mr.
Barini?
Here's where I think it's interesting. I think people would be critical of the likes of Markovic and Lallana, right? But Barini didn't do anything either. But people will forgive Barini because he ran around a lot and because we were desperate for one of our forward players to do well, and we think that for a lot of the fan base, he's not Balotelli, so that pleases him. For us, he's not Lambert, so that pleases us. So he's kind of getting a lot of goodwill based on who he's not rather than who he is. But that's the truth. I don't think he did anything in an attacking sense last night that was any better than what Lallana or Markovic did. That said, he was exactly the forward we needed last night. He ran his bollocks off. His movement, and we laugh a lot about Brady because that's what Emma says about him.
Yeah.
But he was intelligent. He held the ball up well. He had a couple of nice little runs that actually Jean nearly found him a couple of times with a nice few clip balls. And I think when you're talking about Barini, sorry to segue slightly, but how good was Varane last night? I mean, he was phenomenal.
The one thing about Barini is he had a disallowed goal.
He had the ball in the net, and if Ramos wasn't such a big guy.
So I counted that as a good thing, though.
Well, I did.
He was unlucky, though, wasn't
we
he?
We should just tell Ramos.
If Ramos does that fall 10 times in front of 10 different referees, they don't all blow their whistle. No, he took a real chance.
I didn't even see that much of a foul, to be honest with you.
And
he was right to finish it off. Yeah. Because you never know.
I mean, a lot of players run around, but Don't get me wrong. I don't think Barini has a future at Liverpool, so I'm not going to...
You don't?
No. I'm not extolling him here or anything. I just think that not a lot of...
Has he an immediate future?
Well, yeah, because we don't score goals. It's a bit of a raffle at the moment. We do score up front, with Sturridge out. So, I don't think a lot of strikers will put that much effort in, the way he did last night. Last night... There were times where he was trying to anticipate where we were going to scoop the ball
and
he was straight out trying to press Marcelo and Arbeloa if the ball landed out there, and he's gone there from the centre, and he did that all night, and I know it's not much, it's running around up front, but at least he fucking did it.
Two strikers we've got wouldn't have been able to do what he did last night. You know, that's the reality. Balotelli's a big guy, he can't run like that all game. Lambert's a big guy, he can't run like that for 4 minutes. So I mean, the reality is that Barini was all we had if we were playing a forward.
Need more intense training sessions. It's January.
I'm going to train really hard this week.
He looks he's still got his tool belt on from when he was a fucking
beetroot factory
or pipe fitter, where the fuck he was. But anyway, Barini, in three appearances, in the last three appearances, he's shown something that not enough of that team have shown, which is he wants to fight for his place and fight to be in that team. And if actually everyone put in the level of effort that he puts in, that team would be a lot better.
If in that situation, a Craig Bellamy, because I was looking at him saying he was a poor man's Craig Bellamy last night.
Mm.
Bellamy there is just that little bit wiser, little bit cuter.
Yeah.
Little bit nastier, a little bit edgier.
A bit nastier, yeah. Yeah,
little and bollocks.
Little bollocks. That's why we love them.
In the face.
Yeah. He's too nice.
Snarling at Varane.
Yeah.
Maybe worrying Varane.
Yeah.
Varane looked, he was just let look like this Rolls Royce. It annoyed the crap out of me, lads. It really annoyed me.
He's still annoyed, but he's intensely good. For the age that he is at a centre back, and I said,
I don't have to like it.
21 or something. He's
brilliant. And I said, you don't see centre backs at that age so good that often. And he is just a Rolls Royce.
Do you know how good he was? Even if Ramos hadn't been playing, we wouldn't have scored. That's how good he was. Seriously, you could have taken Ramos off after 10 minutes and played Varane as the only centre back, and they would have had 10 men, and we still wouldn't have scored against him.
Right, well, we've spoken about how we were a little bit blunt on attack. We brought on three players who can offer a lot in attack. It was Gerard, Coutinho and Sterling. not a whole lot of impact, I think it's fair to say, Phil, is it?
I thought Sterling and Coutinho tried hard when they came
well,
on.
Yeah, but, impact.
I thought we lost a lot of impetus because we took off Emre-Can. I thought that's damning Gerrard when he came on. I thought Gerrard really didn't bring anything to the game.
Are you talking about the diagonal ping balls that slowed everything up?
Yeah, and I just look, you know, and it's really hard seeing a player that's been so brilliant for Liverpool Football Club wind towards the end of his career. Mm. Now, the only hope is that, you know, this is his standard shite half season under Rodgers. And he'll have a great second half of the season.
It's a valid hope.
And if we want him to have the great second half of the season, given that he's another year under the clock, he needs to be dropped out of more matches and needs to be saved a bit more. Because, you know, there's an element of this which is fatigue as well creeping into Gerrard. And I don't care, you know, just because he's not playing the international games and he's getting breaks, he's playing in nearly every single match.
He's also a year older, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, if he's having a little bit of dip in form and a dip in confidence because of the way he's been playing, just bringing him on for 20 minutes isn't necessarily going to turn things around. You know what I mean? Especially given that we were still pretty much fighting a rearguard action and trying to play on the counter-attack. So maybe
particularly playing him there. Yeah. I mean, you don't bring him on for 20 minutes and play him deep. If you're going to bring him on for 20 minutes, play him in the number 10. Yeah. You know, throw him up front and say, go and, you know, go and see what you can do up there. Mm. I mean, I understand why he did it. I understand all three subs. I think they all, you know, they all make a degree of sense. If you're looking at that bench, you say, okay, well, there's the three subs.
Did you ever believe we were going to get a goal when they're on the pitch?
Because the way we set up was stupid, really, to be honest with you, when we made the subs. Gerrard has to come on and play it short and carry the ball. What we lost when Jean went off was nobody ran with the ball.
No, we had diagonal runners into the box and we had diagonal balls to try and find them.
It's, you know, Real Madrid must have been going, this is fucking
I'll take
great.
That.
All day, just keep paying.
One of the worst things was that despite how deep we were playing, even from the first few minutes when the midfield won the ball back, they were passing it nice and like they were trying to use it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but when Gerrard came on, like it was back to kind of okay, hang on, and I'll have a look and see if there's a 60-yard ball on anywhere. And there was one moment that really kind of summed up kind of, you know, this first half of the season incarnation that we get of Gerrard, where Coutinho had to make about three different movements, you know, coming towards Gerrard. Gerrard's ignoring him, so he runs back off and comes back again. Gerrard's ignoring him, and then on the third time, Gerrard kind of goes, "Oh, there's no 60-yard ball on, so I'll give the little square ball to Coutinho, and he can try something more progressive." Yeah.
And that delay of the pass allows Madrid to drop back and set themselves up. So when Coutinho does get it, they can go and press him. Then so it's like when you're playing in that counter attack thing, it has to be done bump 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 bump, because that's the only way we're going to get through. And any time we did break, it was three, four quick passes, got us out of defence into their half. And then somebody would get the ball and run straight up.
But the other problem with the three players we brought on, and this is, you know, by taking off Jean and even Markovic, to be fair, right, we had no outlet ball. Because Sterling, Coutinho and Gerrard all want the ball in the middle of the park. Mm. Sterling doesn't want to go long to look for a long ball.
They were all
ball.
Getting on the ball in the middle of the park.
They're all, Show Madrid want that all day.
Yeah.
Yeah, go and have the ball there. You're not going anywhere. No one's running in behind because Barini's fucked. You know, there's literally no one who can break past. So I never understood the three. I can see, again, at the beginning why you're going, those are our three best players, let's bring them on. But actually, I think it would have made more sense not to bring Gerrard on, bring Henderson on, tell Sterling to go along and bring Balotelli on and actually have something up in the... you may as well lose 3-0 or 1-0. Do you know what I mean? We should have just gone for it.
Okay, let's look forward to Liverpool versus Chelsea. Looking forward, Paul, is that what we're doing? We're looking forward in all senses of the word. Are you excited, Paul?
Can't look sideways.
You can't, well...
Unless you've got eyes on the side of your head.
Don't let Phil get into the fourth dimension.
No, it's only a matter of time. It's only a matter of time. Rescue us, Paul, quick.
Yeah, I think so. I think I've 100%, I'm really refreshed at what Rodgers did, you know, kind of saying, no, that's not good enough, what's been happening recently, and I'm going to change the personnel. I think he does have a kind of tricky job now, how he approaches the Chelsea game, because obviously we did get a reaction. There was a lot, it was much sharper, there was a lot more organisation. I think the problem is that, like, because there were so many kind of players that were put there to do a job, we have to change. We have to be a bit more open against Chelsea, I think. Mm. And this is where it comes into, does such and such a player keep his place? Like, you know, stuff like, has Barini done enough to like earn a start at home against Chelsea? So I think he does have a kind of a big dilemma coming up here where, you know, he has come out and said, this is why I've changed things. And now he has to see if, like, we're going to see now if he's going to back it up or, like, how many players he does bring back. Because he said, like, that they don't necessarily come back in for the Chelsea game.
Yeah, exactly. He's gone on the record saying that. That's a good point that Paul raises, David, that, like, you know, there's a huge amount riding on this now. Not just the fact that we've talked for the last few weeks about a points grab and how we need to get an average, and we've basically blown the crap out of that for the last couple of weeks. But it's more important than ever now to grab points. And now Rodgers' credibility is very much on the line in terms of even with his own squad, surely.
Well, look, make no mistake about it. This is a massive game. Like, this is, we have to win this game. You know, there's no getting away from it. Chelsea at home, okay, they're in great form, right? But this is a game we should be, we need to win this type of game to get our season back on track, right? To be fair, we tend to play better in the bigger games. Even the game last night proves that. You know, the better the opposition, we tend to raise our game. But we have to win. Well, I don't have to win. I mean, that makes it sound like an ultimatum. But this is a very important game. If we don't win this, it's 11 games, 14 points, right? That's 1.4 points per game. You essentially then, to get to 2 points per game, which, you know, we always talk about after 20 games, you know, you're talking about 26 points out of 30. You know, that means you can afford to draw two games or lose one out of the next 10 games. And we don't look like we're in that type of form to do that. No. So,
and you've got the Christmas period in there.
And you've got the Christmas period.
Which is like very hard to navigate, which means you basically have to win every game over Christmas. And we've got United and Arsenal in that run as well. Yeah.
So I think that it's a massive game for him. I think that he's bought himself a little bit of, not breathing space. I don't think it's necessarily that, but I think he's got a lot of people who were ready to, who were just so frustrated that he wasn't doing anything. I think he's piqued their interest a little bit now, and people have gone, oh, okay, well, so long as he follows through on this, as long as he, you know, he tries something different, if he goes back, if he names his side on Saturday, and Johnson's playing, and Lovren's playing, and Skirtle's playing, and Gerrard's playing, and Henderson's playing, and Coutinho, you know, and it's the same side, and actually he's learned nothing from the game on last night, I think a lot of people are going to be really, really frustrated that some of the players who, you know, worked really hard, and for me, there's two in particular, which is Toure and Emre Can. I think both of them should start. I think Manquillo should start, but I got a funny feeling Johnson's going to start.
Okay, well, look, we will go
final thing on Mourinho, because I know Paul brought him up, but actually, if you read Rodgers' comments after the game, he says Emre Can was fantastic, Toure was phenomenal, Lallana was excellent, and Borini, he really ran around a lot. Or something like that.
Yeah, he said he worked very hard.
Yeah, he didn't really come up
to
say,
"Hey, Mario, how are you doing?"
Phil, do you buy that he's bought himself a bit of time and maybe staved off an awful lot of the negativity?
I don't jump into the buying himself a bit of time, because I don't think he's under pressure, right?
Exactly.
But I think he's bought himself a bit of credibility. In terms of what he did, right? I think ultimately the actions that he did was the actions that the fans wanted. You know,
has he bought credibility with you? Because I know there's been a massive debate amongst fans about how he kind of lost his marbles a little bit in terms of his decision making. And that's a fair question in terms of some of the things that we've seen.
You know, he
the
does,
selections particularly.
He does if he makes the right selection at the weekend.
Yeah. Okay.
And I'm not talking about the result. I'm talking about that if he uses what went on the
what
pitch,
we saw last night. Yeah.
And applies that to the game at the weekend, and you know, he doesn't just fall back into picking the same load of shite that hasn't worked for fucking God knows how long at this stage. You know, and ultimately, the manager has to be ballsy, he has to make tough decisions, and he has to dump reputations. Reputations don't win matches, you know?
It is important that we start winning points. Like, the Madrid game, I thought, with the group situation there, and, you know, the games against Ludogorets and Basel, which are obviously more important to us, I was looking forward more to how Rodgers approached the game rather than whether we won it or not. Yeah. And I liked the way he went about it. Against Chelsea, obviously it's more important, more urgent that we need to start picking up points really soon. But again, I wouldn't be distraught with a draw if Rodgers looks like he's kind of taken on board, I can drop these players and I can bring people in and I can change things around and try and get results kind of pragmatically.
Yeah.
If he continues doing that, then I'd be happy. I don't think it's 100% vital that we win this weekend. But I do think
you want to see that level of progression in the setup, like the first talk about.
I want to see, you know, like that he is making the players take responsibility, because I think that will stand us in good stead going forward. Well, and I think we'll get more out of the players that way.
I think it's going to be fascinating how we set up. I think it's really going to be fascinating.
Well, let's start talking about that. Let's start from the back, maybe.
And even looking at Chelsea, who are 1-0 down at the moment tonight, they've rested players, you know, but they haven't rested many that you wouldn't imagine won't start.
Hazard has just come on as well.
Yeah, Hazard is playing.
Oh, I hope he snaps his hamstring.
Doesn't make a difference, man. He's another fucking cyborg. He'll still play at the weekend. He's got the titanium place that he injected into John Terry when he was 11.
And let's remember,
11.
They came to Anfield last year with Demba Ba up front. So, Diego Costa's not going to make it.
Looking at it, like they started Fabregas tonight. They've Terry, Felipe Luis, and they have the other fella at right back. What's his name?
The other fella.
Ivanovic.
The lad with the head.
Yeah, the fella with the head.
Yeah, man with the legs.
But they've rested Courtois. Zouma is playing, so Cahill's not playing. And then they've started with Shorlo, William and Hazard, and then they've got Drogba up front. So, you know, looking
shit
at that,
team,
like that's a fucking, like, you know, he's just thrown the game there.
Yeah,
he's waved the white flag.
What about all the fans that have travelled to where the fucking
they've gone to Mars Bar and they just have disrespected the competition.
They've gone to Haribo.
And all the interest in picking up the jellies. Mourinho's not even gone.
There's
a cardboard cutout on the sideline.
No. You want the lady physio is in charge. Like, oh, she's the right thing. Yeah.
But you know, like, seriously, do we? Good man, yeah.
Good luck, Dave.
But do we sit back and play like the smaller team and try catch something, nick something on the break against them? Or do we play like we've played the last couple of years and be ballsy and be aggressive?
I'd like to say the crowd would kill them, but there's no guarantee of that. The crowd must just go very quiet and pissed off.
But the issue you have here is, how does Mourinho come? Because if Mourinho comes and gets them to sit back and like, look to play on the counter like last year,
yeah,
but with more potency up front than they had last year, right? You know, there could be a huge barren track to ground just in the middle of the park, nobody standing.
Just after
whoever gets tip off.
You.
Just Lucas and Tumbleweed in the middle.
Well, okay. Well,
they'll just leave the imprint of nil on either side of the
only hope with Chelsea is that, well, two hopes, I guess. Look, if both teams play to their best of both their abilities, Chelsea will win the game, right? Mm-hmm. They're a better side than us. That's the reality of it. But they do, historically, Chelsea have a bit of a wobble in November. Right, they you know, they tend to be always have a bad patch. They were poor against QPR. They were actually lucky to get out of that game with what I thought was a very soft penalty. They're struggling tonight, so you've got to hope.
Should have seen the United game out as well.
Well, they should have seen the United game out. So you know they're not swashbuckling like they were at the beginning of the season. So our hope has got to be
they've no momentum.
That they haven't got that they don't have momentum, but also that Rodgers, as to Paul's point earlier, has psychologically got this right. That he, you know, took all the players away, right, to Madrid. He kept them an extra night. We've just had what was a promising display.
Yeah, that was even getting criticised.
Well, look, people are fucking idiots, you know. And then, you know, you got to hope
they stayed an extra night.
You do disrespecting the competition. Yeah,
he
brought the whole squad.
I'm delighted that everyone was there to see that
as well. Yeah.
I'm delighted everyone was there to see what went down in Madrid.
Yeah,
that started the whole Sturridge just fit again rumors, and then it was okay. Right,
saying that,
done.
I think we might get Sturridge. I think there's an outside chance.
Don't
Sturridge
do it to me, Dave. Don't do this to me.
Dave,
come on.
Well, at least you know what the pod's
called. Anyway, going back to, I think we've got to hope that what has happened in Madrid, as in the time they spent together and the performance, has had, you know, that word we use, that, you know, a galvanizing effect on the squad, and that there's been a reaction, you know, and we go again.
Dang! Get out.
Hashtag we go again.
Get out.
Demand cans.
Jesus Christ. Okay, let's look at the lineups before Thomas says anything else that we have to. Lady physios and we go again. Good God. Paul, starting from the back.
I can't. I'm still cringing.
I know. Dejan Lovren about to return. Colo out.
Bollocks. What's
the likelihood? What do you want and what's the likelihood?
It's an absolute travesty if Touré is dropped after that.
Yeah.
It would just make a mockery of all the positives I've just taken from the whole game. And believe me, I'll be a fucking man on the edge. Like, there is surely no way Lovren comes straight back into that team.
Yeah.
We'll wait until Touré scores another, you know, ridiculous own goal or something. But he has to play after the
World Cup. Well, unless it's for Skrtel, which is what I would do. I would drop Skrtel.
Yeah.
I think I think we've got 90 minutes out of Touré at left-sided centre-back. They look really good. I'm not sure we get 180 minutes of Touré at left-sided centre-back to make him look really good. I think, whether we like it or not, Laverne longer term is who Roger sees there. So for me, I would play Touré and Laverne, and then when Sacco's fit, you drop whoever's had the poorer run of games. But Skrtel, you know, last night is just covering up for the fact that he's the poison in that back line.
He's the one constant, though, over all our years of like shy defending. He's the one constant, and nobody seems to fucking spot it, but he's always there.
He's like just there.
He is, though. Like, and the reality is, that's got to be addressed. We're never going to have the type of defence that we want until Rodgers looks at Skrtel and says, this guy cannot be in my defence. If that in the short term means Lovren, then I would rather short-term Lovren than long-term Skrtel.
Short-term Lovren. I enjoy a bit of short-term Lovren myself.
So I feel it.
Yeah. What about the fullback positions? I'm going to go back to you again, Paul, to depress you further with Glenn Johnson.
Not Moreno and Manquillo. If Moreno and Manquillo doesn't happen...
But no. Paul's getting mad this weekend. Tune in.
We discussed this. That we're looking at. Was it you, Phil, saying Johnson's basically the alternate now? That basically left or right side, depending about. Oh, Phil's rocking in the corner.
Skirt was you're the right, constant, buddy. And Johnson's
no play. I'm walking no play.
It's very
all Glenn and no heavy.
It's very real. It's a very real possibility.
You know, if the two fullbacks don't keep their spots for the weekend, it's a strange decision.
Yeah, it would be one of those strange decisions.
But because Johnson's playing, he's not going to start Manquillo in two games. Johnson's playing.
Yeah, this is what
brought you in here tonight? Jesus Christ.
He could play left back.
Can you stick a nail a bit?
He could play left back.
No, because no.
You can't take Moreno out of that team.
But he does tend to rotate Moreno and Manquillo. He does. That's what we have. And we don't have a left back.
I just think they've been the positives in the season so far in terms of when we've defended.
Yeah,
the two boys.
Yeah. So we're hoping to see them, but...
I don't see the logic in putting Glenn Johnson back into the team. Mm. However, I don't disagree with Dave. I'm just going to refuse that he's going to get back into the team.
Oh, yeah, let's go with that.
I'm not saying he should. I'm saying I think he will.
Yeah, but I'm just refusing to accept
it. Let's go with your team sheet.
Comes out, he's just going to go, no, that's actually Manky. There's a typo on the website.
What about ahead of the back four then?
I'd go with Chan, Henderson and Allen.
Chan, Henderson and Allen.
Yeah.
Mm. No.
Yeah.
You think Allen did enough there to keep his place?
No.
Or would
it,
you,
no. No, I don't. But I think, of all our midfielders.
Mm.
Given that they're going to be up against the likelihood of who they're facing, Matic, Fabregas,
Ramirez.
Yeah, you know, just I would like to put out our most mobile
and midfield. Technically.
Yeah. Just say, okay, big game. For once, I'm going to show that it is. And now, however, I do think it's going to be Chan, Henderson, and Gerrard that starts.
Well, it is. Oh, you think it'd be Chan?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Is there not a very,
I don't know if he'll play Chan.
I don't think he will either, because I really want him to.
Yeah, and he's one that he really likes to rotate, doesn't he?
But
yeah.
If he starts Lucas, Gerrard and Henderson, I'll cry.
He's not starting Lucas. There's no way he starts Lucas.
But all I'm saying is, you know, if you see that again, it comes back to learning the lessons from last night.
Yeah, well, that's what we need to see. Isn't
and this, like if we're talking about the positives, learning the lessons from last night, I start Chan, Henderson and... You know, I think he starts Gerrard. Gerrard is captain, and he's going
start.
To start. Right? Do you know what I mean? Yeah. As much as Lucas had a good game, depends on how we're going to shape up. But it's much of a muchness in real terms, and there's that extra bit of quality that Gerrard has when he's on form.
It's not even a question. Last night in his press conference, he said something about, I spoke to Stephen, and we'd flagged this up, and he was very professional about it.
But I think for Gerrard as well, I think for Gerrard, it's a big moment. You know, it's a chance to erase that slip. If Gerrard has a wonderful game and we win and suddenly we look, it gives us that wave of confidence going into the international break, and we've beaten Chelsea, you're coming off the back of a decent performance against Real Madrid, and then you get that. I just think Gerrard, there's going to be a personal level here that he wants to erase the memory of last season.
He'll also be angry that he didn't play in Madrid.
Yeah,
that's what you've got to hope for, right? Yeah. Is that
He'd be angry about last year as well.
Well, and angry. Yeah. I mean, you've got to expect the reaction here. Sorry, Paul. The other thing I was going to say is I would play Lucas before I played Alan.
I think Lucas played better against Madrid, but against Chelsea, I would probably play Alan over him.
I think Matic would. Well, it depends where he plays Alan. But if he plays Alan in the 10, that's just stupid.
No, I'd play Alan the deepest. It goes back to I would not play a 4-2-3-1 against these, regardless of what we have. Like I was saying, yeah. I'd like to see, you know, maybe a run at playing a 4-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2- think, you know, going back to the Matic and Fabregas show and even Ramirez, or even if they have Schürrle or whoever they're playing in there with him, right? You know, I just think those two boys will offset, whether it's Lucas or Gerrard, and it's going to be Gerrard, right? So will offset the fact that he can't cover as much ground, but those two boys will just go and go and go, and they will not, like as we were talking about, John, he will not be one bit fazed with the physicality in that Chelsea side.
And given Gerrard's motivation, that is the midfield that most would probably want to see, isn't it, in terms of like Gerrard, Chan and Hendel, that's it.
And I've no issue with that midfield.
Yeah, that would be.
But I think if it's genuinely a meritocracy, if he's genuinely standing by what he said last night, then either Lucas or Jean has to play, right?
Yeah.
Mm. So, and I would play Jean. But if neither of them play, and Toure doesn't play, and Johnson play, then, you know, all of a sudden, I think he's losing a lot of goodwill then.
When you say all over.
Well, for me it is anyway.
But I would play Gerrard. To be honest, I would play Gerrard anyway in this game, just because I think we're going to need him, emotionally, leadership-wise, and I think he'll be angry.
No, it's a good point about his motivation. Yeah. It is. Well, what about ahead of that three in the middle? Whatever shape it takes, our three most attacking players, who do we like, or who do we expect to see? Does Borini keep his place? Does Balotelli come back in? Do we see a front two? Any theories?
If we're going to Diamond, I'll go back to what I've been calling for weeks, which is Sterling and Balotelli.
Yeah.
And then it's who you're going to play in the 10.
Yeah.
If he plays the three in midfield, then he's playing something like a diamond or something like 4-3-3, in which case your front three is Coutinho, Balotelli, Sterling, some version of that. Who knows where they start?
I don't want to see Balotelli isolated. I think if you're going to play Balotelli, if you're going to play one up front against Chelsea, right? I don't think it's going to work for a start. But if you play one up front against Chelsea and you play Balotelli on his own, I don't think it's going to make any difference whether it's Newcastle or whoever it is. And I think the same goes for if you play Borini up front on his own, and if you play, we don't have anyone else. So, that's literally, you know, yeah. I just want to see, for this, put the two up.
Okay.
Put Sterling and Balotelli
and up
front.
And if we do, is our number 10 our number 10?
Well, I'd have Coutinho there, but I would have no issue if during the game Coutinho and Sterling rotated through who's playing in the 10 position. So it changes the focus of how your attack is.
But if he plays Jean and Henderson, just as a slight counterpoint, we will have runners from midfield, whereas we don't have that when Alan plays, right? Mm. So if Gerrard plays deep and Jean and Henderson, let's say nominally he plays Henderson in the 10, and Jean break it from midfield, I think that will support Balotelli because he'll have players around him. Mm-hmm. Whereas we didn't have that against Newcastle, we were just completely toothless, like, you know?
Yeah. Okay, well, look, we could do it to death, but I think we've done it to death. So let's talk about predictions. Paul, how do you see this going?
2-1 to us. That's that has like a load of asterisks beside it. You know, Johnson related stuff. Yeah, 2-1 to us, I'm going
to
go.
Okay, a qualified 2-1 to us. Dave Thomas.
I don't think I've ever been on this pod and not predicted that we'd win.
You're not going to start now, are you?
I am. I think we'll draw 2-2.
A 2-2 draw.
Yeah.
Okay. I think the Gerrard factor might be enough. It's a massive game in that, man. I think it might come, and I think it might be the difference. So I think 2-1. I'm going to go with Paul on that. Phil.
Phil hasn't stopped rocking, by the way.
I always go with a 4-0 loss, but I'm actually scared that it could be a 4-0 loss. So
I was going to say it's a little too close on a 9.
I see where you're going with this. Yeah.
However, for some reason, I think we win.
Okay.
I do. I just have a feeling this week that we win.
Do you know sometimes football has a narrative, right?
Yep.
Chelsea are undefeated all season and they stopped us in our tracks last season, and now, you know, can we stop them in their tracks this season? And, you know, do we get a win like we did against Tottenham just before the international break that sets us up? I don't know. I agree. There's something in the water that it says.
Something in the water.
There could be.
There was actually the nightmare. The nightmares I was having on Monday night. I was chased by this demon called the Lady in the Water, and I was freaked out.
What the fuck are you talking about? You were being chased by a demon.
Yeah.
Don't go drinking with him. Don't go drinking with him.
Yeah, but 3-1.
You know when you've been tangented. I am Lou Schwarre. You are listening to Trippers Chat.
Okay, let's have a little few Trippers Chats because it's that time in the podcast. And we'll start off with one from Dean Corso, who suggests a topic in relation to our captain, and he's wondering, if it came down to it, yes or no, do you renew Jared's contract and deal and keep him on the same money, or do you allow him to leave? What would you do? Is there even a question? And so on.
Same money.
I assume he's not going to take any less than he's on. Stephen Gerrard after all.
My feeling on this is that I think Gerrard would benefit from going somewhere else. Not in England though. But just going somewhere else to experience.
Are you trying to come off as a philanthropist who wants the best for Stephen Gerrard?
That is exactly is that what you're he's actually. Doing?
Are you seriously trying to sell Lady in the Lake? Are you trying to sell us that? Because I'm not having that.
Or else I just made that up.
Or maybe I've made this whole podcast up. So you're telling me it'd be good
this
for him?
This Matrix is fucked.
You think it'd be good for him? Yes.
I think it is. I think all players should at some stage play at a different club to see a different vibe to the whole thing. Yeah. But if he has any intentions to go into management or coaching at the end, to be stuck in one club with one set of beliefs, etc., going along, you know, it will benefit him to go somewhere else.
Okay.
To understand, different expectations, different sort of ways that teams and structures and all work. I just think that for me anyway, I think it's time that Liverpool need to move on as a club without Steven Gerrard at the end of the season.
Okay.
And I think for him as well, it would be good for him to go somewhere else before he finishes his career.
That's going to be controversial, kind of a shout, I imagine. Well, Dave, would you agree?
Do you know what? I'm kind of conflicted about it, to be honest with you. I think if you could guarantee me he wouldn't go to another club in England, and it was what he wanted, not that he felt shunned by the club or not that he felt like, you know, he wasn't wanted or anything like that. Mm. You know, if he did something like Alonso did, where he went to Munich or something like that, you know, I say Gerrard goes to Madrid for a year or something like
PSG.
That, or something like that. You know, I'd find it difficult to begrudge him, but I got to be honest, there is a big part of me that thinks there's, you know, something epic in seeing him finish his career at Liverpool, you know, and I think Gerrard is one of those players that we will not truly appreciate how good he is as a player and how good he's been for a few years until after he's gone and we don't have him anymore.
I think people do outside of the English league.
I think even the reaction last night to the fact that Gerrard wasn't playing against Real Madrid by a sizable portion of our fan base will tell you that they still see him as Steven Gerrard from 7 years ago.
What happened, the reaction from the Madrid fans when he was brought on.
Yeah. Yeah, but what happens, Paul, if he has a latter half of the season like we spoke about earlier on, which is as impressive as the last one was? I mean, nobody's going to want to see him go, and it's going to be a non-issue then, isn't it? You're going to have an awful lot of people then saying, you know, you keep him, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, that's because when second half season, Gerrard is very, like, he is a very good player, and I think he'd be a really good squad player to have, you know, if his game time is managed properly. So yeah, I would keep him.
That's the side you come down on.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, let's move on.
What about you?
Well, I thought I already said it. I totally accept what you're talking about with his experience and all the rest of it. But I'm not really interested in Steven Gerrard, the manager now. I'm interested in Steven Gerrard, the player now. And there's plenty of time for him to go and coach and go and hang out with different coaches. And it's not like every door won't open to Steven Gerrard. So as far as I'm concerned, what happens with our football club with that footballer? And I want to see him playing. And if he, I'd like to see him finish with us. I think there's still a slight possibility he might even win a Premier League with us.
But there has to be a continuation of what started last night, which is Roger's where he's not the
main man.
He's a normal player.
Yeah. But I think he's still got a chance to have that Brian Robson title that he didn't have for his entire career. Yeah. I think it can happen. So that's where I stand. Okay, slightly lighter note on the next one. From Paul, who tends to give us lots of questions, a slightly lighter note. Video game fans, who would win a fight between Street Fighter characters and Mortal Kombat characters?
Well, Mortal Kombat characters would, because they have supernatural powers. So there's, you know, very little that Ken and Ryu and, you know.
Oh, but they've got their little blue ball that comes out.
Yeah.
Sub-Zero would destroy them all.
What would Guile do with his stupid fucking haircut against people who could fire?
Nah, not wrong with stupid haircuts, mate. Right?
You know, the best thing about this entire question is you guys might as well be talking about the last episode of Emmerdale. I haven't a fucking clue what you're talking about.
Yeah,
I haven't played
hipster twat. Whatever.
I haven't played either of
you've never played Street Fighter or Mortal Kombat.
Neither of them ever.
Jesus, that
ever.
Explains a lot.
Well,
about
I mean, to be fair, he's from a generation.
What does it say about me?
He was a giant freak.
No. To be fair, I mean,
Trev
his idea of a Kabuta game
the fighting
was
grounds in the 1840s of Mortal Kombat.
He was this in Dawson Wells War of the Worlds. Like, that was his version of a combat game.
The little cartoon men on the colouring box scared him.
I ran out into the streets worried about those fucking aliens. I'll have you know.
Do you remember Kylie Minogue was in Mortal Kombat?
She was with Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Was she fighting? No.
Actually, fantastic, the fact that Jean-Claude Van Damme and Kylie Minogue were in the Mortal Kombat film means it wins.
Yes.
It wasn't. That was they're in the Street Fighter film. That's
Street Fighter film.
Street Fighter wins. No, Paul, I hope you're happy with that.
Did always in the Mortal Kombat film was the guy who played Highlander. The French
Christopher Lambert.
Christopher Lambert, I think, actually.
Not the fella from the TV series.
No, he's Lambert.
What's that?
Not the fella from the TV series.
From the movie Highlander, there can be only one.
Bert.
He was American and he had a French accent, remember? And nobody can ever explain.
Your man who was in the TV version of Highlander was like the shit Steven Seagal. Do you remember him?
Was there a TV Highlander?
He had long hair. It was very Steven Seagal, like he had the trench coat. And the long hair.
Where do you stand, Steven Seagal? Is he did you tell me before?
He is the greatest actor of our generation.
Yeah, yes. I've seen you two guys talking about this before.
Oh, he's amazing.
I have to say,
his range of acting.
The biggest load of horse crap I've ever heard in my life.
Trevor,
he's fucking awful.
Trevor, clueless man. Have you not seen the range of acting? Do you know the one where he's in China and he kills everyone in China?
Yeah. Oh, well, right there. That's an Oscar right there.
And then there was the one. And all the ones where he was on the
Rising
boat.
Sun was Rising
and
Sun.
The train.
All the ones on the boat.
Under Siege.
Under Siege. Yeah, best.
Under Siege.
And then he goes to Russia and he kills everyone in Russia.
Let's be honest. Steven Seagal is an overweight, fucking poor actor.
Lads, there's another fucking name.
You are clueless, man.
I'm a poor actor, but I'm not overweight.
Force of Execution. It's a fucking tour de force. It's just amazing.
Have you seen Nico, which is his best film?
No, Under Siege is his best film.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Not the old ones.
I've lost a lot of respect for everyone
doesn't
in this
get
room.
Under Siege 2 doesn't get the credit it fucking deserves. Alaskan oil wells, that's fucking trains,
hang on.
I'm sorry,
that's
buddy.
The best sentence.
In the bin.
That's the best sentence
I've
ever heard.
In the bin you go. You have no clue about acting.
Stop.
You need is Steven Seagal's new films where the studio has no input. It's just him and his fucking fantasies laid out on paper. It's the same film every time and it never gets old.
That's
and
the
he's
best sentence.
Never shot below the shoulder.
The best sentence I've ever heard. It was just being uttered
the
by
arm
you.
Break. And he has his quintessential moves, the arm break. The throat grab,
the neck break,
the little 2-inch neck break, like the little twisty thing, like he's taking the top off the bottle.
And hang on a second. And you're saying that he isn't the greatest actor of our generation?
No, I'm agreeing with you now that Under Siege 2 is the most underrated film of all time. Holy Christ.
But let's go back to the Under Siege franchise here and the
let's
number of
not.
Actors that it launched, okay? Tommy Lee Jones was in Under Siege.
Gary Busey.
Eleniak, Gary Busey.
Who's
in
that
Under Siege 2, Catherine Heigl's
Erica Eleniak.
From Baywatch, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Tremendous.
I don't know her.
Tremendous.
Tremendous actress.
Tremendous cake.
Does she not get killed in the first scene in that?
Who cares?
But by the way, as an aside, just Google, put into YouTube, Steven Seagal versus testicles. Just Google it. It's the best video in the world.
Okay, I will do that. Next one is, again, along the same lines. Dave Thomas, with your Seagal opinions, you're going to like this. This is from Mike Murrow. And Mike wants to know, what's your favourite movie starring a professional wrestler? He reckons They Live with Rowdy Roddy Piper. Again,
no,
I don't know who the
no.
fuck that is. So.
First of all, there's the whole there's the Hulk Hogan comedy
series.
Action canon that you've got, you know, like Mr. Nanny.
The comedy action canon.
Suburban Commando. You know, all tremendous movies.
God, you're all wrong in the head.
Well, look,
Says your man has never played Street Fighter.
No Holds Barred, where he fights Zeus and Zeus nearly kills his brother. That was a very moving piece. But actually, the best film featuring a wrestler is... Oh, actually, there's loads of good ones. There's The Marine with John Cena, which is tremendous.
You're not a Rock fan then, clearly.
Oh, The Rock. I forgot about The Rock. The Rundown with The Rock is very good. But actually, the best film featuring a wrestler is The Princess Bride with Andre the Giant. Princess Bride.
That's actually a very good show. I agree with that.
It's not, though.
It's not a good film.
The best film with a wrestler in it is Guardians of the Galaxy.
That is a good film, and it does have a wrestler. Who's the wrestler?
Dave Bautista.
He's obviously the lad who looks like a wrestler.
He doesn't talk in it.
he went to the Steven Seagal school of acting. Top professional.
Yes. So you're happy with that, Paul? Have you got a shout that can top either of
these? I suppose it depends. It also depends on what you regard as a wrestler, because there has been many celebrity wrestlers as well.
That's very true.
What do you mean, celebrity wrestlers?
Mr. T was in a wrestling match.
Hulk Hogan is in Rocky 3. Yeah. See, that's part of the Hulk Hogan canon.
For fuck's sake.
I actually feel my brain shrinking.
You could do a Hobie game of films with Hulk Hogan.
Trev was thinking, Baz Luhrmann. Not
Baz
a fucking
Luhrmann. I don't actually don't answer that.
Get in the bin.
I feel like
get some Seagal movies into you this weekend and some rest and the Hulk Hogan canon.
Steven Seagal on Saturday, Hulk Hogan on Sunday. I guarantee you'll be a new man by the time you walk out of there.
There's something wrong with you all. Carl Trotman wants to know, what's the heaviest animal you could lift? Please bring us back to earth with some heavy animals.
I seen Seagal lift.
What could you lift? What could you lift?
I'd have to look at Steven Seagal's technique. I believe I could lift a cow.
You couldn't lift a cow.
I could.
Listen, you're from the Pale. I know that. You don't see
the
fields.
Pale.
But a cow is a big thing. It weighs 3/4 of a ton.
Not when it's far away.
Oh, I see. Okay. Genuinely, Paul, what's the biggest animal you think you could lift?
I don't know.
Would you manage a sheep?
I've managed a few. what you gonna do? Probably one of those St. Bernard dogs.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
I'd say maybe it's a bit kind of awkward though.
He would be awkward.
You need something like that's, you know, kind of small enough to lift, but heavy as well.
Okay.
Baby hippo. The baby hippo. The baby hippo that he used to tweet. Yeah. I loved him.
I'm sure we've all picked up a few pigs in our time.
Baby hippo. The hippos are vicious. Very territorial. Wouldn't want to fuck with a hippo.
A baby hippo, though. You'd be scared of a baby hippo. That's not very Seagal, is it?
I'd rather lift up a cow than a hippo. That's all I'm saying.
On the topic of hippos.
Trev loves doing triples chats.
I do. Really, it's really exciting. Last one is from Charlie, who we were talking to recently, and she's wondering, who is your man crush?
Well, after all this
You're
talk.
You're quiet
films.
Now.
After all,
the talk about the films. So, who's your man crush? Come on.
Emre Jean's
your man crush. I think that's going to be a very common choice.
Yeah. Since the first moment I laid eyes on him.
You've always thought...
Fucking Taylor Swift song or something.
Yeah.
He will be mine.
Not 100% sure I can relate to this man crush business. This is where fellas have gone about Xabi Alonso's beard all day, isn't it?
Basically.
I'm not really getting this.
I've been
going about Xabi Alonso's beard. That's not the problem.
Well, you've just told us Emre Can will
Emre
be yours.
Emre Can is a much better looking man than Xabi Alonso.
You're getting upset about
Alonso's
now.
Alonso's ginger.
You're getting upset about it now.
And
you're telling
man,
me.
Let me tell you, that is, you know, that's not attractive.
As a gingerbread man.
Ginger beards are not a good one.
Give me a shout, Paul.
Yeah, I was really critical of all the man, like, you know.
It's Pirlo, isn't it? You love Pirlo,
fucking,
yeah.
No, I hate all the shit that people are like, oh my god, look, he looks like fucking Lewis Litt out of Suits, he does, like, with long hair and a horrible, horrible beard.
See
out
you
of
what?
Suits.
Related to a Steven Seagal movie. I don't know
one of the Hulk Hogan canon.
Tommy Lee Johnson in The Siege. That's what he looks like. Yeah.
Steven Seagal is an ex-CIA agent. He's a lawyer now.
And he's a real life bounty hunter.
And he kills all of China.
Yeah. And he was a sheriff.
Long story short.
He was a sheriff. Go on.
All that went out the window when I realised, like, I'm absolutely in love with Mamadou Sakho. And he's just brilliant.
Mamadou Sakho is another good sheriff. That's brilliant stuff.
Okay. And he has a big dodgy mohawk like me. big shite mohawk.
See, he wouldn't be very tender though, would he? Like, you know,
oh no, he'd fucking lift you around the gaffy.
Why are you both imagining your man crush has to have sexual relations with you? I don't understand this. Phil, who's your shit?
What type of crush doesn't have?
What kind of life are you living?
I'm just being all innocent and coy here. So who would you go with?
Benedict Cumberbatch.
What the fucking fuck?
No, he's fucking weird.
Why? Okay. Do you like his character in Sherlock or what?
Yeah.
Is that what you are? Yeah.
What?
I wish people could see your face right now, like how excited you are.
Seriously, we've got some serious pupil dilation going on here.
Andy was in Star Trek.
Star Trek?
Yeah.
What else is he in? I've never watched any of that.
I'd actually
shit.
Go with a Star Trek shit as well. I'd go with the old William Shatner back in those days. Very good looking man.
Yeah, right. Before he got the wig.
Nice hair.
Yep. Ted Danson.
Ted Danson. Good God. That's
Ted Danson. Yeah, Ted Danson.
Look at Ted Danson in CSI now. What's wrong with him?
Look, forget that now. He doesn't exist now.
Elvis was a good looking man back in the day.
Steven Seagal.
Elvis was a good looking man.
A few decent tunes as well.
Yeah.
Steven Seagal.
Steven Seagal. Got three in a row.
Solid choice.
And he'd be he would guarantee to protect you.
Exactly.
You'd feel safe with Steven.
Oh, Steve, what's your mind?
He has a variety of skills.
He'd always be warm because he has the blanket right up to his neck and his stations as well.
And he'd always have a spare jacket for you.
You keep you in the jacket.
Look, he's already in it.
I've just got to kill China. I'll be back in a minute.
Can I come? Yeah, come on then. Come on. Stay in the jacket, will you? Yeah, grand stuff. Hold on to the back of my neck. It's grand. I only need one arm. I don't even need to kick anymore. They won't be expecting me. Last time I was here, happy days. Fucking pile of piss.
They're all dead. I killed everybody. So don't worry.
I left two for Hulk Hogan.
There's only about five left.
Here's my mate Hulk Hogan.
You know, in the movie, the foreigner, he kicks someone in the bollocks and they're dead. Like, they fall into a river after he kicks them in the bollocks, but they're dead. Like,
finish with a very brief admin. As usual, Irish listeners who want to play football should come and do so at Astro Park. You can book your pitch time at astropark.ie. Get onto our website, that is lfcdaytrippers.com, for various reasons, just do. Your day trippers tonight were Paul Brennan, Dave Thomas, Phil Casey and myself, Trev Downey.
Right.
Hero.
I've got... What is that?
It's just Hero.
I've got five. Right?
Do you not remember when Hero did an advertisement back for the 94 World Cup?
I just know
it was a train.
You have the most ridiculous fucking memory. I swear to God.
The references he comes up with.
But you can't remember films that means like The Godfather.
He was advertised.
The uncle-in-law.
Your man, the fella who was in the mafia. The fella who was at the top of the mafia.
Oh, your man. Hazard missed the penalty.
The da.
The
goddad. No, the Hierro, right, was advertising the blades for Adidas that weren't Predators. And the advertisement for it, he was in the Spanish jersey, it was the 1994 World Cup, and he was running down the train tracks and he turns into a train.
Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
I thought it sounded familiar.
And he goes,
that's not for me.
Hero. Hero.
Oh, fucking hell, no. Jesus, I thought that sounded familiar, but I definitely don't know that. Right.
Or else I made that up.
However,
another one of your dreams. The lady in the lake.
The lady in the lake was waving
trying to
from the
train. Going, Hero.
You should put.